Hey, agility addicts, or soon to become one, welcome to Startline Podcast. I'm your host, Kara Armour, and I am here to edutain you about the world of dog agility. Join me as I spend time interviewing special guests, share my journey, successes, laughs, and failures. We all start somewhere, and we all end up on a start line. My hope is to help you grow in the sport we all love. Episode 47, Ready. Hey, agility addicts. Today, I want to discuss kind of a hot topic, and I've touched on it a little bit before, but I want to talk about when trial stress breaks connection. This has been a pretty popular topic lately because I know a lot of people feel like, oh, their dogs disconnect and they're having connection issues, and that is 100% part of the issue, but I think we're also overlooking the role of stress, or not overlooking, but not paying enough attention to the role of stress and what we can do as handlers to help prevent stress from breaking down our connection that we may or may not already have. So first, I want to suggest that everybody get on Facebook and go to search for Dog Agility Connect the Dots. This is a wonderful group started by my training mentor and instructor for Care and Prior Academy, Emma Parsons. She's also the author of Click to Calm, a must-have book and understanding, particularly for those with reactive dogs. She's been working with many teams currently and in the past to maintain and keep connection, particularly in agility. So first, I think we need to discuss, what do we mean by connection? As defined by the dictionary, connection is a relationship in which a person, thing, or idea is linked or associated with something else. So concerning agility, I will say that connection is the relationship that you and your dog have in association with performing obstacles in a sequential manner. So to me personally, connection is as foundational as learning how to jump, learning the seesaw, going through a tunnel, going over the dog walk. It's a foundational skill, but it doesn't have a physical obstacle to learn. It's a series of cues with associative behaviors that requires reinforcement history and constant generalization. If we don't have that, you just have a dog that does what it likes in the ring. And some of us think that our connection might be lacking when our dog wanders off to ring crew, visits the judge, or when they sniff, roll, freeze, or take off at the start line when we have not released them. And while connection does have much to do with their ability to perform the behavior you have cued, stress, my good old friend stress, can act like a cloak that prevents a known behavior from being able to occur in an environment for which you cannot or do not train. Like a trial. So if you talk with any of the long timers, so this is what I find fascinating. I like to talk with everybody, and I like to hear about agility in the old times. And in New England particularly, you will hear, and I want to hear from my California listeners to chime in as well, that agility is mostly or was mostly outside. I am sad to say that in the 10 years I've been doing this, we used to have 5 or 6 outdoor shows, and recently it's been 3, then it's 2, and sadly this year we are down to 1. So I'm sad. That's a whole other topic for another day, but one of the things that I hear from the long-timers in this sport is because they're lacked this pressure from the walls, especially painted pictures, steel posts, judges in places between the gate and the dog, and having that actual physical pressure, you could have people crowded by only one side of the ring as opposed to all four and being outside and around. Outside, there seemed to be less stress. Right, we have all those things inside with the walls and people up against one gate or one side or just 2 sides. And this makes perfect sense because the environment is much more open outside. You could argue that there were more distractions outside, squirrels, leaves, rain, all, you know, slick grass, people walking around the ring outside at any angle. But I would say the distraction training, more people were training outside, so the distraction training was happening simultaneously and was part of connection training. So I think we have a disconnect now, not to say that we don't train inside, but I'll get to that. But outside, almost any dog could leap over the ring gating or even fit through it. But when you add walls and add pressure, and when you add pressure, you add stress. But okay, most people train in places with walls nowadays. Again, California people, please chime in. I am very regional. I am speaking about New England. Most people in New England train in places with walls. I know in the summertime we're outside, but what does that have to do with trials being outside versus inside? Because now according to these long-timers, and even what I have seen in the last 10 years, stress seems to have increased. At the very least, we as a community are more aware of it. So I would love to have somebody, press that point. Do we have more stress or are we more aware of it? And there's a lot of factors that could go into this that I do not discuss here. I want to stick to stress and behaviors and training. We could talk about breeding. We could go down a lot of different avenues. I'm not ruling those out. I just have limited time and this is what I'm covering for today. So here are some reasons I believe why we are seeing more stress on dogs competing and so-called quote-unquote breaking their connection to their handler to relieve the stress. So pressure of the physical facility, the walls, the smells, all of that, pressure from the human, new people in the ring, unlike a class, right? So are we, putting instructors generally in the center there, but are we bringing ring crew out? And if we do bring ring crew out, they happen to be our classmates and our dogs know them. And is that helping, hurting, that's something that could be adding stress. Difference in our behavior versus how we cue or act in class. I see that physically. I can see a handling team or an exhibiting team that knows how to do something in class and they get into the trial and they have the pressures of the trial and they do not perform the cue as I know they know how to. Performance anxiety from both the dog and human. That could be the cause for the miscue. Pheromones, smells, the sheer amount of dogs in one place compared to class. Change in routine. Many people take classes in the evenings or daytime, not at 7 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock in the morning when your first run is. Long days with big gaps in runs, unlike in class. Class, boom, 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 right? Your very short breaks. They're created an environment that is much different than class or home. Inability to relieve, decompress before or after runs. That's a hill I will die on. I think it's very important for our dogs to be able to relieve stress and free run. I think that's fundamental to them and their success, particularly for mine and my breed. And not being able to or knowing how to relieve stress prior to the run, so it dumps into the ring. And these are some things that Noreen and I talked about in previous episodes, how to actually relieve stress prior to the runs and directly after the runs and even during the runs. So this is not an exhaustive list. I feel like I could actually go on. But I feel like a lot of these are also interconnected and you could argue that some of them are the same and I just didn't want to get into that. I just wanted to list some factors that I see that are causes for stress in trials that we have today. And I've noticed that my dogs will stress more at different facilities over others. So different facilities are laid out and structured differently. Where we have a larger space to warm up or line up, my dogs tend to stress so much less, if at all. And then the tighter the space, the tighter the lineup area, the more stressed my dogs are, and I have to work harder on my stress-relieving cues and behaviors that I am conditioning to get to relieve stress so my dogs can run their best. So back to connection, because again, you can have stress that can ruin connection, but you have to have a strong, predictable, stable, and reliable connection before we can go adding stress to it. However, I will agree most of us think we have put the time in and then realize the stress can just throw almost all of our training out the window. And I know how frustrating that is. We fall into slumps. We get into these positions where our dogs were fine one week and then they're stressing the next week or new stress. Or as we've discussed, the bubble of stress is moving. You've put your Spanx on and you slimmed out your thighs, but now you have a muffin top. So yeah, stress moves around a lot and it's something that we might think we've nipped in the bud and then here it rears its ugly head. So when you find that trial stress is covering up your connections, there are two roads I think we need to head down to combat it. One is train for the stress. Two is increase your connection by creating conditioned emotional responses. So let's first talk about training for stress. Noreen and I cover a lot of what stress is and how to combat it in episodes 33 and 35 of this podcast. I still go back and listen to those to keep myself on track because when I feel like the stress bug is biting us, I need help. I still need help because my brain goes into the, we go down those holes. We all know you can't replicate trial stress or even the trial environment for that matter. But we can't seem to convince our own brains to pretend that class matters as much as a cue. So we've got our own mindset issues, which go to Julie Bacon for that. But honestly, it matters more. What we can do is create other stress or stressors, not trial stress, but obstacle stress, environmental stress, other stressors that we can teach our dogs over time to accept and work through. So this is the training part of stress. So moving past the emotional paralysis of stress to the predictable relief. Then when we do get to a trial and the trial stress is applied, our dogs are better conditioned emotionally because they have worked through other stressors and trial stress is more easily avoided. Remember, connection is a behavior, stress is an emotion. They are interconnected. If we had a Venn diagram, we'd be where those two circles are meeting in the center right now. So let me give an example. Lots of stress shows up at the weave poles for many dogs. I had this issue. You guys are probably sick about hearing it, but for at least a year with Debbie in trials, I had this issue. I went to seminar after seminar to the point where the presenters were like, why are you here? Your dog totally can weave. She could weave while I skipped backwards, while I stood across the arena. She could get world team type entrances. The girl knew how to weave. But at trials? Nope. She popped at pole 10. Why? Stress. It was stress I put on her as well as trial stress. She had her own, but I'm going to own a lot of that. And one time it was obvious to me. It was more than just emotional. But somebody had stepped in poop outside and they walked. They ran their dog and they had left a poopy footprint every few poles. And that was enough to make Debbie say, oh, no, no, no. I'm not weaving in those poopy poles. Even though she wasn't really near it, it was on the other side where the humans were. So what did I do? I noticed this and I said, huh. Poop makes it challenging for Debbie naturally. She's a very clean dog. So I went home and I collected some poo from my yard and I lined the weave poles, not where she would have to touch it, but close enough to where that footprint was. And she was reluctant to weave at first, but I was able to get her to weave and reinforce and reinforce and reinforce to where she stopped caring and suddenly poop was like, whatever, you just weave through it and I get high reinforcement for it, right? So that's what I was doing. I was making weaves more challenging for her by going to these seminars, but I wasn't making them more stressful for her. Poop was a stressor for her. I'm not saying for everybody to go do this. This is just an example that for me made sense because I could see that footprint, it was very clear. This isn't always clear for us. And I know it's hard, but this was a clear example. So next time, you know, there were conditions less satisfactory to Debbie, there's been poop in the ring before, you know, beyond that, she was like, no problem. I didn't have to worry about it. I didn't worry about it. She didn't worry about it. We were able to train through that stress. So for others, think about things that your dogs, you know, they don't like. It doesn't have to be poop. I know it's kind of gross. They were nowhere near the poles. They were just sort of in the vicinity. But for others, does your dog like to step on a wet towel, tinfoil, bubble wrap? See what your dog is aversive to or is like, ooh, a little cautious of. Put those on near, under the weaves or whatever obstacle they struggle with. Create more stress so you can work through, reinforce, and create an association that while the obstacle or environment became harder, more stressful, when we get to a trial with other stressors, the environment or obstacle is missing the extra challenge that you trained through and therefore is easier to do. It's relieving for the dog to see in a trial. They get out there and they're like, there's no tinfoil, there's no bubble wrap. I can do these weaves. You've added an extra stressor in training so that when you get to trial, the trial stress is not the stressor anymore. You've reduced the likelihood of that having an emotional impact. So train harder and smarter so that trials are easier. They should be easier for our dogs, not harder. Training should be the hard part where we challenge our dogs. That's where the challenges happen. You train for higher levels when you run in a trial. You train for higher levels in class when you're training for a trial. And you want to train for bigger stressors in class so that you have less in a trial. And with this, so back to that Venn diagram, those two circles that overlap, we're still in that center part and we have to still, the second part is increasing our connection. So training frequently to build the reinforcement history, which builds predictability, stability, and reliability in behavior is uber, super, duper important. Being deliberate and detail-oriented is one of the main focuses in connecting the dots. Watch default behaviors. Yours, not the dog's. I've been watching the AKC Agility Nationals, which are streaming right now as I record this, and the amount of people clapping at their dogs to try and regain connection and the fact that it doesn't work is astounding. These are high-level dogs that qualified for this event. I know we see it often in the lower levels, but we cannot help ourselves. Guys, this is not blaming. I have been there. I was a chronic clapper and can share my videos of me clapping away and my dog's getting more and more annoyed
and stressed by my antics. Be more aware of your behavior. To when you want connection, cue or do what is reinforcing to your dog. I can assure you, unless you practice and pay for clapping and training, it's just a stressy distractor, if anything. Yes, your dog may look at you, and they may appear to come back briefly, only to get you to stop clapping. But if the stress has not been relieved, they will veer off again, and you will flap your clappers once more. Just watch for this behavior. Again, coming from a chronic clapper myself. And every time I start up a new dog, I seem to do this too. A novice, I'm always like, Wendy, Wendy. And she's like, oh, stop. So it's something to be conscious of, because it is hard to help ourselves. We get out there. I talk this talk. I try to walk the walk. I too am a work in progress. So I'm with you. This is coming from, and I'm with you, and I'm learning, and I'm sharing my journey of learning. So now I want to dive into, this is going to get a little trainy on you, but conditioned emotional responses. So just like humans, animals come biologically equipped with a mechanism that elicits emotional responses after perceiving pleasure and pain. These emotional responses take place quickly and reflexively without much rational thinking involved. So, two clear examples. When your dog hears the clicker, if they're conditioned to the clicker, their pupils may dilate, among other physiological responses, but they will get emotionally excited to receive their primary reinforcer, their cheese, their treat, their whatever. On the flip side, if you use an electric fence, your dog may come to dread the beeping noise that alerts him to that. If he's walked ahead or gotten too close to the line, he will receive a shock for crossing the boundary of an electric fence. So that beeping noise is a warning, and so they get upset when they hear it, and they therefore change their behavior. Those are conditioned emotional responses to stimulus or cues. We create conditioned emotional responses in agility, and I highly recommend this for your start line. Some of us do this by accident with the leash. In my household, if you so much as go near my dog's hiking collars, they erupt with joyful noises, play bows. It's a mess of excitement. They go crazy. This is their conditioned emotional response to us touching these items or even walking near them, which are associated with going for a hike. These are also called unintentional cues, but whatever. This is also the argument the chalk collar people use. When I grab the collar, my dog gets so excited, they must love this collar. No, they love going outside, not the collar. My dogs don't love their regular hiking collars. They love the association with it. It means load up in the van and go for a free run. I watch every weekend people slipping the leash off their dog's head and the emotional state of their dogs change in a millisecond. This is just one example of a conditioned emotional response that you might want to consider. I also don't see a lot of people training with their trial leashes. Some do, but not all. You really need to look at what goes into the emotional state of your dog at trials. The start line I'm using is a pretty stark example for many, because the amount of times I hear from people, he has a start line in class, but not at trials. Video what you do in class and what you do in trials. Yes, the environment is different, and there are many different stimuli that make class different from a trial, but what are you doing differently that could be feeding into the conditioned emotional response of your dog? Can you create a cue that is generalized and constant, predictable, reliable for your dog that it creates a conditioned emotional response? I believe some of you are, and you're getting the conditioned emotional response you don't want, freezing, or the other, over arousal and taking off. So for me, and this is personal to my dogs, as I have very much understand that food is needed for others. But for me, I studied my dog's behavior and emotional state from crate to gate. In training, I always had food on me, always in my pockets, and I would randomly pay it out in the ring as reinforcement. I wasn't going to change that for training, for reinforcement. I needed my reinforcement. I needed to strengthen my reinforcement history. That's, you know, reinforcement over time. But I can't bring food into the ring. No problem. I'll just bring it right up to the gate. Many of us do. Do some motivational tricks, get them all excited, and then shove that last piece in their mouth and pass through the gate ready to go. Well, my dogs would shut down. They would stress right at the point of passing through that gate. I could literally watch their bodies just change. They had a conditioned emotional response to passing through that gate. Why? Because going through that gate, once they were through it, they knew no food was going to come. We were not training. My training had not carried over. It wasn't going to happen. Instead, I created a new response that when we go through the gate, you get no food, you get stressed, and the run was crap. So in training, I thought, you know, I was feeding them normally, and in trialing, I was feeding them right up until I physically could, and I thought all would be fine. But no, I created a conditioned emotional response at trials that we go through the gate, no food, no fun, stress. So, okay, that wasn't helpful. So it took me 5 years of throwing spaghetti against the wall to realize this with Debbie. I needed to create a new picture. I needed to chain a series of behaviors from the moment I opened the crate until the second we returned to it. I created a new conditional emotional response based on singular cues that I chained together. So I took a bunch of behaviors and I would cue them, pay them, and then I would link them together over time. And so each of these behaviors were paid separately. Then you string them together and they become a cue and reinforcement for the next behavior. And I should clarify, it didn't take me 5 years to build the chains. Those were relatively quickly, took a few weeks. It took me 5 years to realize that I was just trying all these different things because I was asking all these different people and they would say, try this, try this, try that. And finally, I realized with Debbie that I needed, you know, thanks to KPA and Karen Pryor Academy, I learned about chains and I needed to create a new crate to gate routine that created a chain of behaviors that one cue reinforced the cue for the next and so on and so on. So here is my detailed version of what I do for my list of cues. Number one, I open the crate. Number two, I give a ready cue. I say something like, who wants to do agilities? I say something and very excited. I have a series of phrases. Then I put the collar on. I stretch their rear and I ask them for a front stretch. Depending on the dog, I butt scritch or another cue like, you're so good, you're so good. And then six, I run down the stairs or I get in line depending on what facility I'm in. In the lineup, this is seven, each dog has a series of behaviors I cue. I'll run through some of Wendy's tricks. I do her paw, her bang. I'll ask for a speak, or I'll literally just play with her. I'll grab her feet. With Phoenix, I ask her to go up onto my knees and I massage her back. Then I give her little light punches. She likes it. Don't send PETA after me. She likes her little punchies. And so that's, I massage her because I'm applying pressure and relieving pressure. Dogs that roll, dogs tend to like massaging. It's one of the things that we talk about for stress relieving. I'm relieving stress because I know Phoenix is stressing. Number eight, as we get closer to the gate, I increase play with Wendy and I let Phoenix watch. So two different dogs. Wendy, I increase my connection by playing with her and getting her a lot of fun. Phoenix, I have a really good connection. She literally looks to me for everything. And I let her watch the motion because that gets her excited. It's motivating to her. Wendy, way too much. Her prey drive is off the charts. I need to watch that with her. Number nine, then I ask Phoenix to jump into my arms. You'll see me do this. I tell her up. I get her into my arms to get her super excited. Wendy is now allowed to see other people like Noreen, who she loves, or anybody, any person that she finds that gets her excited. Most people would say, that's going to break your connection. I have found with Wendy, people are motivating and exciting for her. So if she has any stress, those are stress relievers. She likes to play with people. She gets really excited. It works. It's something that is rewarding to her. I'm not giving her a cookie, but I'm letting her see people and relieve that frustration of being stuck on this leash with mom and not being able to see them. So with Wendy, I'm playing with her or I'm allowing her to see people. With Phoenix, I am having her jump onto me because it's something she enjoys and watching the motivation of other dogs. Very different dogs. Number 10, I enter through the gate. Phoenix is set up between my legs. Again, like the massages I do, it's stress relieving. I actually do a little gentle squeeze. Wendy, I collar grab and set her up. That is a condition that we have developed and that it works for her. Phoenix, I squat down, look her in the eye, and I take off. Very little lead out. Very rarely will use a lead out. When I use a lead out, she generally always tries to food scrounge on the floor, which is stress. Wendy, because she doesn't like lead outs, Wendy, I put a flat palm in front of her face and I say, wait, and I walk away, turn my back to her. I then squat, so I get down, kind of I lean back like we're taking off for a race together, even though I'm, you know, 10 feet ahead of her. And she doesn't stress anymore with lead outs. Phoenix still does. So for Wendy, that works. For Phoenix, it doesn't. Had I figured this out, lots and lots of video watching. Every time your friends are like, oh, I'll video you, thank them profusely and then say, hey, can you get right before I enter the gate too? That's very important. So what is the point of all of those details? That's how detailed you need to get to create a chain of behaviors that are conditioned emotional responses for going into the ring and reducing stress. And each one of those is related to connection. I created a cue, which creates a connection, which creates me as a resource and something to look to, an associative good for my dog, so that when they stress, they're more likely to come back to me, or I can cue something in the ring that has a conditioned emotional response that brings them back to less stress and more I can do this, right? More connection. So connection is key. And it's the foundation on which you will build so much of your agility ability. Without it, you cannot function in the ring as a team. But even with it, when the cloud of stress comes over, you need to figure out just how your team can brighten up that day by bringing the sun back out. I hope this has been helpful. Please reach out to me if you need some ideas. I would say that I'm not throwing around out there, but Noreen Bennett has helped me with the creativity in problem solving, and I've been able to get better about problem solving. But you really do. I am not saying stop giving your dog food before you go in the line, because that's what worked for my dogs. I have told some of my students that, and I do believe it will work, but I've also told some of my students that we're allowing their dogs to sniff prior to going into the ring, which is a stress relieving behavior. I'd said to stop that. It really is team dependent, but you guys know your dogs best. Really, really look at your dogs and figure out how you can make the stress go away and that dark cloud pass and have that sunshine in your runs again, because there really is an ability, and it's not easy, to get the joy of training into your trials. And so I hope that this was helpful for everybody, and I hope that you all enjoy your journey. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on whatever podcast platform you listen to. Thanks, and have a great day.